It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And there's another silent partner sitting over to my left, too, visiting this morning. Adam's son is here, probably on your way to somewhere, right? Or just for fun.
Yeah, that's right.
Soccer today?
No, not soccer. Actually, lacrosse.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I know your neighbors are into it.
Yeah, several of them. So,
I hear it's catching on a bit. So
it absolutely is.
Well, it'll keep you warm on it.
Yeah, not a game, just going for some equipment.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, anyway, to all the regulars, welcome back. We're glad you're always here because that's what gets us up and gets us moving, even on a frigid Saturday morning. And it is, it's awfully pretty if you look out your window, but dress appropriately if you walk out your door.
It is not warm out.
Oh, and all you Jaguar fans, I bet I know how the average Jaguar fan is going to keep warm at that game tonight. And I think it comes in a bottle. It's just a guess, but I can't think of a better way.
Yep.
We wish them well tonight.
Just remember, this is a prime time playoff game. So it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, exactly right.
Don't start too early.
All right. And I think what they have done to get into that spot after the October we had, they deserve to get a good chance at still playing at the level they've been playing at anyway.
Yeah.
I hope they show up.
The ESPN was saying that this was their I think they call it FPI or something, said that both teams had a 50% chance of winning by their metrics. So it's the closest playoff game this weekend, according to their metrics.
Huh. Well, I heard one, I don't remember who it was because I'm not into sportscasters, but I heard one guy actually stick his neck out and he said, I think Jacksonville will win this.
It's not a crazy bet. I think it's just the history of Jacksonville, the Jaguars, that make people hesitant to pick them.
Right.
It's not how they've been playing over the last month.
I got the secret for them, though, after watching everything. If the defense scores once, we got a pretty good chance to win. And if they score twice, we're going to beat them.
Well, I would say that's almost true across the board.
Universally?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised. Anyway, back to finance, although we are just talking a lot of money here.
That's true.
Cheapest tickets are $100.
And the I saw also that the city was trying to get $900,000 or something to fund the extra employees for the game. Of course, I think they'll make that back in ticket revenue and things like that.
I certainly think so.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Go Jags, I say. It's been a long, long dry spell. All right. Anyway, if you're new to the show, it's not a sports show, anything like that. We actually do talk about money, yours, mine, ours, everybody's, the whole thing. And as usual, there's a lot to talk about out there. And sometimes we come in here dragging our butts a little low because of the way the market's been treating us. And that's happened a lot in the last couple of years.
I mean, well, no.
Year, anyway.
Year, yeah. That was all of last year,
well,
actually.
Well, started in March 2020, actually. When the COVID hit, that's when the trouble all began.
Yeah, that lasted all of a month, though.
Yeah, but then some other stuff happened. Anyway, it has been a different kind of week and a lot more fun, so take it away.
Yeah, what a difference a couple of weeks makes. So far in 2023, stocks have gone from doing nothing positive in December to breaking out above their moving averages, and in the case of small cap stocks, breaking out above their bear market downtrends. International stocks are trading at their highest level since April on strong performance in Europe. I can't even remember the last time I said strong performance in Europe.
I think it was in the office this week, and were probably in your teens.
Yeah, probably. So if you can't tell, I'm hesitantly getting slightly more bullish on the stock market.
Yeah, and if you know him well, you know how unusual those words sound to me.
Well, not historically, just within the context of the last year.
Yeah, as you said yesterday, you have recency bias, and it's not good.
No, it's definitely not good. There is a major hurdle that we still have to clear, though, and it's going to happen on February 1st. The Fed is going to meet again and decide on a rate hike path from here on out. And my hypothesis is that if they clear the way for 1% or less of rate hikes in this year, we could see a very positive market reaction.
Yep.
So that would be either a 50 basis point hike at that meeting and then maybe up to two more 25 points during the year or four 25s throughout the year. I think either of those paths would be fine. I don't think they're, I think that it's a little bit overkill.
I got a better path.
Yeah.
25 this time and then sit down, shut up, and go on vacation.
Agreed. But I don't know that they can do that because they have the government problem of having this need to do something all the time.
Yeah, that's Washington and its glory.
Now, if they outline a path where they leave the door open for multiple 50 basis point rate hikes, we're in trouble.
Yep.
So I don't think that's going to happen. I want to be clear, but I don't know that they'll be dovish enough. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. This is all happening on the brink of earnings season. We just saw some big banks report this week, and the results were really strong.
Yeah.
Six out of eight of them that reported beat on earnings, and a different six out of eight beat on revenue. So that's really good percentage hit rate on the big bank earnings. So a strong start. I was very impressed. Delta had a pretty impressive quarter.
Yep.
They did lower their guidance for next year or for 2023, but the fourth quarter that everyone was so worried about doesn't seem to have been that bad so far.
No, the banks are liking the higher interest rates.
Yeah, which is not surprising.
No.
So far, it's been a good year. This week, the Dow was up 2%, the S&P up 2.7%, and the NASDAQ up 4.8%. For the year, the Dow is now up 3.5%, the S&P 4.2%, and the NASDAQ up 5.9%. That Santa Claus rally, I guess, just came a little bit late.
Post-Santa.
Yeah, that's not usually the case, although this is part of the best part of the year for stocks. Mm-hmm. So that that time between November and the spring is usually the best time of the year. The Dow made its lowest point on September 30th of last year, hitting 28,725, and it's currently sitting at 34,302. That's a pretty big jump.
That's a pretty substantial move.
It's so substantial that it's 19.4% up off the low, and if it rallies another 0.6% this week, it will officially be in a bull market.
Yep.
So that's pretty exciting.
I'm speculating, or whatever you care to call it, that that will happen. Maybe not on Tuesday. It's a shortened week.
It won't
be a Monday.
I don't know that it'll happen this week, but I think it'll happen in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, absent something really weird, we're on our way.
Yeah, I would not be surprised to see. We've come a long way in 2 weeks. I think would not be surprised to see a little bit of a flat week next week. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mondays have historically been very volatile and often not very good.
Well, we don't have to worry about that.
So we're skipping it.
Yeah, that's good.
That's my way of doing things. If you don't like the possibilities, you just don't allow it to happen.
Well, I've got a bunch more, so we'll just have to do it after the break.
Mm-hmm, and then we'll have a trivia question right after the break. And then a response to a listener who asked a bunch of questions and asked if we would address them. And I assured him that absolutely we'll do that. So we're going to spend a little time on that. And it's about things like economics and jobs and things that impact everybody in the country. Again, as I am unreluctant to say, at least with a topic like money, it affects all of us in some way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Banwe Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwe.
And I'm Adam Banwe.
And we will have a trivia question. I want to remind everybody that the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And if you want to call in for the trivia shot, be our guest. But if you have any other topics that you want to cover that we might not get to, we always will give deference to the callers and talk about what they want to talk about. So get ready. As usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Those of you who watch things other than the Dow Jones Industrial Average, but you're market-oriented and interested in what's going on, you may have noticed that lately a phenomenon is going on that I find only about, 8 or 9 years too late. But precious metals are on the move. Gold and silver are both climbing up very nicely.
The silver ETF was up 26% last quarter, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
And well, you know, there are differences in the uses for gold and silver. And one of the reasons that silver is moving is there is a lot of industrial usage of silver, and especially in things like alternative energy and electronics. So the demand is sort of constant, and it's not terribly related to exactly how good the economy is. They just need it all the time. So my question for people is, what is the highest price ever recorded for gold on the open market in today's dollars? There's the catch-22, the inflated dollars. And I'll take it within a few bucks. I've got a range here that we'll get into only when it's needed. So what's the highest price of gold ever recorded in today's dollars? All right, back to the fun week in the market.
It was a fun week. And one of the biggest releases of the week was the CPI report, which actually came in line with expectations on the headline number. But if you kind of dug into the report, it wasn't as good as it seems, which sounds weird, but it was actually good news.
Yeah, exactly.
So less inflation than what the CPI was reporting. And the main driver of that, I think, was housing costs and particularly rents, which the CPI report said rose at a 9% annualized rate in December. This is just wrong. It's wrong. There's no possible way that that is happening. If you have a pulse and you're paying attention even a little bit, you know that the housing market is softening. And with that, house prices are not going up like they were. In fact, in some cases, they are even retreating. And asking rents are definitely coming down at this point. I think the Fed actually knows this. They've said this recently that they know that the housing portion of the CPI report is a lagging indicator, and they indicated that they see what's happening in the housing market.
They were willing to discount it a bit,
right?
Meaning not throw it away, but lessen its impact on their overall
their cost path forward. Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Which I find remarkable that they have that much flexibility and latitude.
I was shocked to hear it, actually.
No kidding.
I'm not sure how the government collects the CPI data, but they are clearly behind it on it, and the Fed is aware of that. So that's the good news. Mm-hmm. But that also means that the headline inflation number was actually lower than the print was, because if you discounted that rent data that was clearly way too high, the CPI is lower than what they're reporting. So that was a pretty good report, and the market reacted accordingly. It initially sold off on the futures right when it came out, and then it very quickly reversed and went higher.
It doesn't matter what comes out. They're going to sell first and then think and then buy.
Yeah.
It's like when you have a Fed meeting, you know whatever the immediate reaction is going to turn around.
One big piece of the inflation puzzle is durable goods. And they actually showed that they're deflating by about 10% mm-hmm. annualized right now. So that's a pretty amazing reversal from where we were a year ago on durable goods. This report, it really just highlighted everything I've been saying for a few months now. Every measure of inflation is showing to have already peaked, and most of them are now headed down. At least the rate of increase is slowing down, if not actually headed down. The one thing that the Fed has been indicating that they want the Fed funds rate to be higher than where the CPI number is right now, the year-over-year CPI number. So what that means is right now we're at about 4.25%, I think, on the Fed funds rate, and the CPI is somewhere in the 6 range. Mm-hmm. They want
and dropping.
That 6 to be lower than the 4.25%, which is going to rise at the next Fed meeting. So what the data is saying that if the Fed goes up by a quarter point on February 1st and CPI is flat or falls over the next 2 months, the Fed funds rate will be higher than CPI by March. That is not a lot of time.
No, it is not.
So that's actually, we're on path for that phenomenon to occur, and that is a pretty key measure of whether or not the Fed needs to raise rates further.
Yeah, and I take a lot of solace in that. As we were just saying, it's unusual to hear the Fed say things that you can understand.
Yes.
Because they utilize Fed speak. But they seem to be slowly coming to their senses, but they're certainly a long, long ways from dovish.
Correct, yeah. They would still be considered hawkish at this point. And they've said some things that were extremely hawkish over the last few months, but I sense that that is changing now.
Yeah, there are a couple of things bucking the trend. One of them is industrial metals, and
sure,
they're starting to come up again. The other one is the core services inflation, which is the highest it's been in over 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as always.
Thanks so much.
Go Jaguars.
Go Jags.
Oh, boy, I'm wearing mine.
Me
Adam's
too.
Adam's wearing his. So we're giving them all the support we can. It's hard to see,
yes,
on radio.
Sure. Yes, but I'm awful glad I don't have a ticket to the game.
Yeah, it's going to be
That's
cold
what we
out
were
there
saying tonight. Right before we went on air.
For sure.
I'd have to think twice about that.
I'm from Chicago, and I lived there 61 years. I went to one Bears game, and I froze my you-know-what off.
Oh,
and
man.
We were about 80 miles north of you in Racine, and back when the Packers used to play part of their schedule in Milwaukee, we would go, and we'd always – my company owned the tickets, so I had the choice, and we only wanted to go to one a year, so I always chose the October game. And generally speaking, you could survive an October game.
Yes. Hey, I've got to tell you, I used to hate gold people until cryptocurrency came along. Now I just even more.
Maybe that's where all that crypto money is flowing.
Maybe.
I hadn't thought of it, but I like the concept.
When I was growing up, I hated disco music, and now I hate rap music even more. So.
you are a Midwesterner, true blue, aren't you? I can tell.
Yes.
Love it. You want to take a
disco
shot?
Almost sounds good. Yeah, sorry. I was going to say 24, 25.
$2,425. $25. You're pretty much the winner. No other way to put it.
You sure?
Yeah, the correction for the dollar as of this week made it $24.2984. And my range is $24.10 to $24.50, and you nailed it. How about that?
Very good. How about that?
That one didn't take long, did it?
That's excellent.
Do you have any? Are you an owner of any precious metals?
No, sir, and I never will be.
Okay. I buy them electronically. I don't hold the real stuff. It's costly to buy if you use the actual metal. It's costly to sell. And when you can hold it in your hand and see how shiny and heavy it is, you're really reluctant to sell. But the right thing to do is sell high and buy low. It's real easy electronically. So I've been smiling quite a bit lately on that part.
I've heard it referred to as the biggest fool's investment. You buy it and hope a bigger fool comes along and buy it higher than what you pay for
it. There's truth in that. You got to... You know, it helps if you're in the business where you're watching these things all the time. You get a pretty good idea where the trend is, and then you just got to bite the bullet someday and take profit. And that's not so bad because it's so cyclical. You know, it's going to go back down. So just have patience, and that'll be that. Now, we don't know that about crypto because it doesn't have enough history to it. So if you want to buy now at a 20,000 level, that's up to you, but... You'll never see that coming out of our firm or our radio show or anything else. You know, it's not for us.
No. And physical gold and silver is really ridiculous.
It is. Hey, there are other ways to do it. You can actually obtain some physical, but it would be a component of some gold that's in a vault somewhere, but it's allocated to you. So technically, you could go over there and ask to see it in the vault. And I say, if you're going to do that, why not just buy the ETF?
Right.
Crazy.
I mean, yeah. I have a brother-in-law who owns about $80,000 in physical gold and silver.
Ooh.
And he's worried about the economy collapsing and the world, you know, Armageddon and all that.
Yep.
I said, what are you going to do with that stuff? Eat it?
You know? It's good poached.
He can't spend it. I mean,
right.
What's the chance that the grocery store stayed open and they only accept silver and gold.
Yeah,
really.
He's, you know,
a little crazy, I think. All right, well, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get your name and address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales. Thanks for the call. Happy New Year, and go Jags.
Happy New Year to you guys. Thank you.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, for sure.
It must have been some quick mental arithmetic in there.
Speaking of Mr. Bales, I just had him out to my place to do some work, and man, he's awesome. He does the best work on alarm systems. So if you ever need that, please let us know, and we'll get you in touch with him.
Yeah, we had to do an upgrade for the new electronics not terribly long ago, and when they were done, there was not even a speck of dust around. They were really good.
No doubt.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have had a trivia winner already. Those of you who are interested in gold are probably smiling, silver the same way. And one of the little things that might affect this whole Fed deal, price of copper is kind of climbing fast again. And that goes into cars and goes into home building, that kind of thing. So we hope it settles down a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably industrial metals being the commodities they are, they probably, when they started falling from the way top, overdid it. The pendulum usually swings too far each way. And I have not checked lumber lately, but it would not surprise me if that's doing the same thing, kind of bottoming and maybe rising a little bit.
I haven't looked at it either, but it would not surprise me. Oil's been taking up a little bit, too.
So. Yeah, it's really been volatile lately.
Yes.
It went from 72 to 79 in less time it takes to say it. So there's some reason for optimism out there, and we'll present some on and off without getting giddy about it. All right. A few days ago, Adam came to me and said, we got an inquiry from a listener and asked a series of questions about economics and things that are going on. And first off, his name is Mark. That's as much as I'll give you. But he was interested in a lot of things that we're interested in, and we're going to go over a few of them. But one thing I wanted to point out, he did say, I'm not a client, so I don't expect you to reply by email, but if you would answer the questions on your show, please let me know. Well, don't feel badly if you're not a client of ours.
No.
Ask us anything.
We do not do this show for clients only.
No. This show is all about public service, and I have coined a term over the past 20 so years of doing radio. We call it self-serving public service.
Absolutely. It's our advertising.
It's really good for our business,
yeah.
But that's not the main reason we do it. You can advertise many different ways, so never feel guilty sending us an email, calling the office, or calling the show or anything. If we don't have an answer for you right away, we'll get you one. But I love the fact that he was willing to have us share on the radio. Because I'll tell you one thing for sure. Whoever you are, if you got a question that you might want to call the show about, other people want to hear the answer because they have the same question. Only about 5% of people who listen to radio shows like this will ever call in. The other 95% are silent. They hope to learn without, I don't know if they think they're going to make a fool of themselves or just naturally shy. Getting on a radio station for the first time, Adam and I can both attest to this. It's a little scary.
Yeah, it is. Well, like anything else that is that public, and it's like public speaking. The first time you do it, you're going to be nervous no matter who you are.
The only two things that, in general, people are more afraid of than death, public speaking and running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we're into those two things.
That is true.
All right, first question. Are the millions of able-bodied illegal aliens counted in the unemployment figures? That's a great question. Do they need to be amnestized, get amnesty, it's hard to say, as citizens in order to qualify to be counted? Well, I did a little research on that because I didn't know that right off the top of my head.
I did not either. I've never thought about it.
Nope. So as far as I can tell, illegal aliens are not counted in unemployment. They are called welfare recipients in the statistics that the government does.
But a lot of them work.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say a very high percentage of them work. That's why a lot of them come here.
One of the definitions of an unemployed person counting in the stats is that they lost an American job. I did not know that either. So you have to get one and lose it. And then instead of a, quote, welfare recipient or just a person working, then you become a statistic for unemployment.
So you can be counted.
But only once after you get a legal job and then lose a job, you will be counted. But now think about this. It's illegal to hire an illegal alien.
Is it, though?
That's the question. On paper?
I remember there wasn't that long ago where you could get in serious trouble if you hired an undocumented person in your business. Mm-hmm. And now I don't think anyone cares.
It could be a change in administration that gives you the different outlook. I mean, it could be the shortage of people.
I don't think it was under Trump that happened. It was probably back further than that. But there was a time not long ago where it was a really serious.
Well, there was
penalty.
A time when Chuck Schumer was really coming down on it. He just couldn't stand the fact that illegals were taking the jobs of Americans.
That's how politics goes.
That was a while back, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
But now, think about this little aspect of it, too. The illegal immigrant population will not hit the U3 or U6 figures directly until they're nationalized, get a job, and lose a job. But how many of them are working at doing jobs today that Americans, they say, won't do, but Americans aren't doing because they're doing it? Now, that skews our number also.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of Americans who are looking for a job who can't find one because of illegal, someone else has it already.
No, I agree with you, but it makes the unemployment figure look a little skewed or a little pretty rosy, perhaps.
Yeah.
A little lipstick on that pig.
That's true.
So it has a great impact. The people coming in illegal have a great impact, but they are not counted as unemployed until all those conditions have been met. So I learned something.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Next question. When will the thousands of scheduled layoffs hit the employment count? Well, that's another really good question.
Is it 4 weeks after they happen?
It is. That's when they become unemployed, absolutely. In order to be counted for unemployment and receive UC, you have to be terminated but available and looking for work for 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's... By the way, I'm going to throw this in because we're talking about layoffs. BlackRock announced 500 people this week are losing their jobs. And I couldn't help but smile because so many of us are so upset with BlackRock.
I hope it's from their ESG division.
That is exactly what I was speculating, that it's because of their stupid stance on ESG, and it's because of people like Ramaswamy who are opening up alternatives to try to take their business away, but that's really not part of the discussion. The point is, most of the layoffs that have been announced already, especially the massive ones, the 10,000s, the 12,000s, they're not all gone yet. A lot of those people are being phased out, some by attrition, some just by the course of business. Okay, we're going to redo this part now, so 500 are gone, there'll be more later, things like that. If they all hit the market at one time, like Tuesday morning, it would have a very dramatic impact on the statistics, but it's being filtered in. Some are doubtless already in the stats, and some are perhaps not yet, but will be. Others, if business rebounds real quickly and unexpectedly, some of those scheduled layoffs won't ever happen. That's another thing that you see frequently. The CEOs like to sort of pad their own position on this and say, we're reacting to the market and we're planning all these job cuts, but look at how many of them actually taken place, and it's not nearly as dramatic as you might think. So, soon, I guess. When will it impact? As it happens, plus a month. That's pretty much. So, next one. There was a question, the third question was more complicated, and I've moved it to the back position. So I moved the last question up front, and we'll get the other one after the break. WBOB has been running ads from BlackRock that sound like public service announcements or goodwill missions. Somebody recently mentioned on talk radio that BlackRock was in negotiation to partner with Ukraine for building efforts via insider connections and the Biden White House. What do you think? I've only got about a half a minute, and I'm going to come back to this, but I'm going to say right up front, yeah, I've read that. BlackRock is trying to put their mitts in Ukraine to collect our money.
Yeah, I'm gonna give my thoughts on BlackRock after the break.
Good.
And I have some opinions.
Shocking.
Yeah.
All right, so after the break, we're going to pick up on BlackRock and what's really going on in the advertising and who's paying for it and why. And then the big question is the last one. So don't go anywhere. It's a big learning day for everybody. So we'll be right back after a break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have been answering questions sent in from a listener. And the subject of BlackRock came up briefly. And Adam says he'd like to share some opinions of his own.
And I do frequently, actually. As a financial professional, we get surveyed about investment companies. I get them frequently.
Yeah.
And I always make sure to really let them know what my thoughts are about BlackRock, because not that they're that much worse than any other company, but they're just so public about it. And they're sort of the public face of like trying to force you to do ESG investments in your 401k. And I don't have any problem with ESG investments. I have a problem with you telling me that I have to invest in them.
I have one more problem too. The more concentrated the company is on the ESG, the worse they perform, according to every study that I've seen in a year.
Well, in the last year, for sure. Now, in other years, they've actually outperformed, because
some
if you
did.
Stripped out energy, it was the worst performing sector for many
exactly.
years. So it just depends. But I just have a real problem with other people telling me how I need to invest, how you need to invest. And that is exactly what Larry Fink and his little minions at BlackRock want. And really, it's not them. It's a conduit for the Biden administration. That's all it is.
I couldn't agree more.
So that's my thoughts. I do not like them. I wish that they would change their ways, because iShares are great products, and there is
absolutely
no reason for me to not want to buy them, except that I don't like the company that owns them.
Nope. He is not doing the company or its investors any favors. And they're now starting to – they're being pressured to, so they're starting to – pass along the voting rights of the companies that are being held of their funds, which they claim to be the owners of those shares, and they're not.
No, they're not.
They are owners of the fund, managers of the fund, but the assets, the shares of the fund are owned by the shareholders, and therefore that section of the company is owned by the shareholder. And I don't want Larry and the boys to be telling my company how to vote.
Agreed.
So that's starting to be passed along. They started in a couple of funds where the actual fund owners are going to start having an input in the way the companies are run. And that can only be a good thing ultimately. Anyway, as to the advertising on this station and others, the radio station has a couple of obligations. One, maximize profits for your shareholders.
Yeah, I have no problem with BlackRock advertising on WBOB.
No. And they have to sell advertising. And being a publicly authorized user of the airwaves, they have to be fair.
Agreed.
Somebody wants to advertise and it's a legal product and so on, take the money and run, I say. So I have no problem with WBOB's stance on this.
I do find it odd that BlackRock would want to advertise on conservative radio, because they're not going to get a positive reaction for the 90% of the crowd.
Conservative listeners are very often well off and are investors.
But also smart enough to know that BlackRock is not aligning with their values.
Yeah, they got to keep trying, I'm sure. Anyway, I don't know if the Ukrainian deal is going to go through with BlackRock or not, and I'm not here to tell you how thoroughly disgusted I am with all the money we're throwing at Ukraine, which I think is going to be fundamentally wasted. But I guess I just did that.
Yeah, I think you did.
Uh-huh. So, you know, if they get the deal, I will not be happy if it's my tax money that flows through the IRS and to the White House, who then backdoors BlackRock in there to help rebuild Ukraine, because I don't want to rebuild Ukraine. We rebuilt so many countries now, and look at how beautiful they are. As soon as it's done, they take our jobs away. That's just me. Well, it's not just me, but it's me. It's my opinion. The opinions stated today are not necessarily those of the management. You hear that, Alexis? I'm being good to you. All right. Now, the third, but actually my fourth question, this one is really good, and Adam and I were chatting about it a little bit in the break, too. What is the long-term outlook for unskilled labor with living wage pressures and the lure of automation on employers? There are only so many lawns to cut and so many chickens to be plucked and processed. Where to begin? There will never, I don't say never very often, but there will never come a day when some unskilled labor isn't useful.
Oh, I cannot imagine a world where that is.
No.
I mean, you can see it in the movies, I guess, with robots mowing lawns and doing everything. But I just can't imagine that. A lot of those depictions were around now in 2020.
Exactly.
And we're nowhere near that. And the other thing is, every time you create a new factory that's automated and you hire all these engineers, all of those engineers own homes, go out to dinner,
yep,
and do dry cleaning. And they use all these services that employ less skilled labor than what an automated factory would need, engineers and that type of thing. So by simply using that automation, you create multiple other layers of need for unskilled labor. And I don't really see an end to that. And maybe I'm being short-sighted, but I feel like this conversation has been had for my entire life. And I don't know if you feel the same, but I've heard it ever since I was able to understand what that meant.
And my first real-world job was in 1972. I got hired by a Fortune 500 company, to be a computer programmer. I had never in my life seen a computer. They were willing to take this unskilled person who, I had a pretty good education, math major and all that, hadn't quite completed it at the time, but they were willing to take me and train me because this was a real growing area. And the discussions back in the early and mid-70s about computers were, a lot of people are worried that they're going to take away so many jobs. Computers will do things that people used to do. And what they found, and this, you know, it's a long time ago and it's been going on for a long time, but they found that computers generate information. And if there's one thing managers like, it's information. If a little is good, more is better. If more is good, even more is better. And what happened was it proliferated managers at many levels because we kept being able to tell them things and they'd share it with the sales and marketing people and that would grow their businesses. Because the one I worked for was putting ourselves out of business knowingly. It was a major muffler manufacturing company and we had like a 3-year replacement cycle on the steel for the mufflers. And we developed, I don't know if they did it all alone, it was company's Walker, it was part of Tenneco then. They developed a stainless steel muffler that had a replacement cycle more in the 8 to 10 year period. So they were slowly and surely putting themselves out of business knowingly, because if they didn't do it, somebody else was going to. Mm-hmm. And I've always laughed about that. But back then, people didn't have as much wealth as they do now. And it was partly the computers and the management, the growth of the economy and all that that created more wealth. Well, with wealth comes what? Demand for unskilled labor. I could keep somebody busy around my house a day or two a week real easily.
Yep.
But what's happening now with the brilliant minds that run places now, the minimum wage deal is going up and up and up, and now it's kind of given way to the living wage instead of the minimum wage. And it's going nothing but up. Even in Florida, we're up at 11.5 or something like that now.
Yeah, but no one actually makes that. It's way higher than that.
Exactly.
Teenage kids in high school are making more than that to babysit or work at the ice cream store.
And that's always going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
So what we got to do is keep the economy lively, make sure that money's flowing around, make sure that we're not taxed into oblivion, because who uses unskilled labor? People.
Everybody.
Yeah. It's people. People have money, they'll use more of it. So when the young people are graduating from school and going out into the world getting work, they're not going to get the high-level jobs, but what they're going to get when they start working is called experience. So experience and education are the fundamental two factors of employment yielding results, economic results that are tangible. Now, the same thing's happening at almost any age with the illegal immigration coming in. Those people are mostly unskilled. And if a skilled person can always get in by applying for a visa, a different kind of visa. But the unskilled people come in, they start to work. Guess what? They get experience. And then a lot of them go to school. And the jobs keep rolling along. I do not think there is any problem on the horizon for unskilled labor so long as they leave us alone enough to live a good economic life. That said, that's all for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Mark, and we'll see you next week. This is the Vanuy Financial Hour.